Take this job and shove it. I ain't working here no more.
Okay, most of us have made the tough choice to leave a job. Maybe not so tough in some cases. Maybe you've gone skipping down the hall to leave that sinking rat ship behind. Whether it's a don't let the door hit you on the way out or a heartfelt farewell, how a company reacts when an employee moves on can have a big influence on the coworkers still on that ship. Or maybe, who knows, maybe your coworkers might break out the margarita machine and party hats the minute you give back your ID. It's a sticky situation that requires a little guidance from our guru on all things office-like. Friend of the BPP and cubicle culture columnist for the Wall Street Journal, Jared Sandberg, joins us. Hi, Jared.
Good morning.
All right, so for the place of business, you write that, you know, some bad things can come when someone departs. Give me an example of two bad things that can go down when someone leaves.
Well, you know, for one, the as consultants would say, the optics are bad. If someone valuable is leaving your company, then the basic underlying message is that valuable people don't last here very long. And that can lead other people who remain to ask themselves the question, what do they know that I don't know, and what am I still doing here?
Now, from management's point of view, should they just pretend the exiting person didn't exist just in order to maintain morale? Like, I don't know who was in that corner office.
Yeah,
I have no idea.
I don't think disappearing someone like that, sends a very positive message. I think, you know, companies pretty much have to acknowledge something about the person, even if, you know, the company might be secretly glad to see the person go. One person told me that they said, you know, you should try to be creative and tell that departing employee that, you know, you have challenged us to see things in new light, even if you're thinking to yourself by the dim light of your dim bulb.
One expert you interviewed said, quote, if the organization tries to foster community and collegiality, there has to be a certain degree of lying.
Yes, I think.
What are we talking about? What kind of lying?
Well, you know, you basically have to realize you're speaking. This whole farewell is a serious signal to other remaining employees. And so, you know, you have to say something positive about the person and signal to everyone that you care about people. Now, lying, I think, may be a strong word. Some creativity if you want that person to go. But usually you can find something nice to say about someone, you know, some contribution that they've made. And that has to be sort of pointed out, because you have to let people know who are remaining there that, yes, you do care about people. You don't just disappear them and pretend that they never were there.
And that this office is still a great place to be.
You're right. Exactly.
Now, for the person leaving, can you give us acceptable or unacceptable reasons for leaving and what kind of language you should use?
Oh, when you're saying goodbye. Well, you know, it's interesting. If you don't want to trigger any bad feelings from the company, then, you know, the acceptable reasons tend to have to do with anything that doesn't have to do with leaving for a competitor. So a family illness, taking care of the kids, a spouse gets relocated, all of the things, the reasons that, you know, you would leave that say nothing or don't indict the company in any way. Of course, the opposite of that would be tricky. You know, if you're saying I'm going to a competitor because the grass is far greener and the opportunity is far greater, then, you know, this is going to not necessarily reflect well on you, but reflect worse on the company, and you'll probably get an earful from someone there or ignored entirely.
You also might find out some unexpected information about your own job and your own status once you leave. Like, say they don't replace you or they hire somebody for a lot more money.
Yeah. The problem with departures is that they often point out the very screwy economics of the workplace, and that is that your own company will probably pay and promote you less than your rival would. Or put another way, your own company won't pay to retain you and keep you as much as a rival would. And, you know, this is sort of a truism that happens in a lot of places, and it's sort of one of the things that, of course, the remaining employees take away, and it's a disastrous, you know, issue here, because then everyone starts looking for better opportunity. But, you know, if you work on prevention, you know, you don't have to pay as much as a rival, but you have to look like you want to pay as close or as much as a rival, like you're at least willing to explore the opportunity, and that'll probably help people want to stay.
Now, you write that 1 in 10 companies have a shutout policy. What would cause them to say, hey, you know what, don't darken our doorstep, you can't come back here?
I think an immature sense of pettiness would cause them to say that. You know, obviously, if their employee doesn't work out very well, then you know, you could argue that every company has a shutout policy, but if they're a valuable employee, I think, you know, missing the opportunity for having someone return, only underlying a great message that the grass isn't greener elsewhere, you know, I think is pretty dumb. You know, you have to take advantage of that. And if that person can still make a contribution to the company, then, you know, you've won on several levels there.
Jared Sandberg writes the Cubicle Culture column for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks, Jared.
Always a pleasure.
Hey, that does it for this hour of the Bryant Park Project. You can find us online all the time, though, at npr.org/Bryant Park. I'm Rachel Martin. Yeah, visit our site. Visit our blog, too. This is Allison Stewart, and you've been listening to the Bryant Park Project from NPR News.